different information from the whole as we look out. But we are all the whole.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to News for the Soul, Life Changing Talk Radio from the Uplifting to the Unexplained. And if I'm sounding a little funny, don't adjust your set. I'm still Nicole Whitney, a little stuffy Nicole Whitney, host of News for the Soul, and my guest today, very excited about the show today. My guest is first-time appearance on News for the Soul, near-death experiencer, Lynn Thomas Benedict, from Journey Through the Light and Back. After suffering from a terminal illness in 1982, Mellon had died reportedly for an hour and a half, and was monitored showing no vital signs, miraculously returning to his body thereafter and had a complete remission of the disease. So that's where our amazing tale begins. So let's welcome him onto the show and start the fun. Mellon Thomas Benedict, welcome to News for the Soul.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
I feel like I'm having a near-death experience this week. So, but your story is incredible. It spans a couple of decades here. I mean, my previous co-host on the show in the early years was Daniel Brinkley, and he was dead, I think, for 28 minutes, which I thought was quite astounding, but an hour and a half.
Well, I by no means hold the record for being dead or without vital signs. It's, the stats out there are actually very interesting if people read the research books. I am by far the most studied near-deather in the world because I have taken part in more think tanks and university experiments than any other near-deather in history so far. I'm not the most famous because that's not really been my goal, but I have been the favorite guinea pig of so many research projects, and it's been fascinating.
Near-deather, there's a club you don't really want to sign up for.
Well, if you go to IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies, their conventions, imagine a convention of mostly all people that have died and come back. It's fascinating. And by the way, the public can attend these things, too, if you want to experience that.
I'm curious, what is the record now that we've brought it up as far as the longest being dead and coming back term?
I think George Rodinia is probably one of the longest. He was actually in a morgue with a tag on his toe for 3 days. And literally came back into his body when they began to perform the autopsy. Very well-documented case. And during the 3 days he was in the ice box with a tag on his toe, reported very accurately once he came back on what his family was doing. He went and visited his family and tried to communicate with people. So there are some very interesting cases. My case fits into what's called a core group of people that have been without vital signs for over 50 minutes, and that's way beyond cortex death. I tend to agree with both sides of the research field. Some say that the near-death experience is only the brain dying, and others say no, it was a real genuine experience, and I agree with both. There is a certain part of that where your biological functions and your brain is shutting down, and then you go beyond that. But there's been a good number of well documented cases of people that have been supposedly without vital signs, air, nutrients, or anything for over 50 minutes and have come back with no brain damage, which I find fascinating.
Well, that's what I'm trying to understand, how it's even, possible if it's documented and they know that there's no functioning going on for that length of time. And that's
once. Well, there's plenty of researchers now that believe there is an extra-dimensional experience, and then there are plenty of researchers also that don't believe in anything extra-dimensional or anything spiritual or that the body and the soul does survive death in any way. So, it's kind of pick your side. I tend to agree with both sides up to a point.
Well, can you walk us through your story? I'm sure you've recounted it a zillion times, but can you just, give us the nutshell overview of what your story was, of what happened to you when you died?
I in 1981, was diagnosed with a terminal brain tumor that was inoperable and incurable at the time, and leading up to that, I had experienced a year or more of like an unending headaches, and then culminating in a series of blackouts, which really got my attention and led me to go seek medical attention. and ended up with a diagnosis that was terminal. And I remember when the scans were in and the doctor came in the room, I was kind of a jokester, and I said, "Hey, Doc, am I going to live?" And just the look on his face was all that it took. And I know there are probably people out there that have been pronounced terminal, and, boy, I know that feeling. It's I literally left my body and floated up to the ceiling of the room and just watched this going on. It was so surreal. And so I know there are people out there that have been pronounced with a terminal diagnosis, but I always say it's not over, not even when the fat lady sings. You can get your healing in so many different ways. I believe I got my healing in the revelations and the processing work that I did during my near-death experience. Before my near-death experience, I was... forgive me for saying this, the product of Catholic boarding schools when I was young. So I pretty much got out of Catholic boarding school without believing in any sort of God whatsoever. And wasn't even an atheist. At least an atheist shows some interest. But the rest of my life, until I had my near-death experience, I was not interested in religion at all. It was pointless to even talk about. I had a rather narrow view of what life might be. And I had, before my... my experience, I really never ventured into metaphysics or even heard the word. I never heard the word near death, and I certainly never heard the word hospice before I ended up in hospice. So I was fairly unprepared for the experience, and was not a happy camper. I was not, say, the most easy person to deal with, because the whole thing made me very, very angry. And but luckily there are a lot of angels around, and there was a woman who took me on as her hospice case, and stayed with me till the day I died, and then several weeks beyond that. But I withered away, and literally around 8 or 9 months in, I believe I died one morning. Normally they didn't wake me up till around 10 in the morning. I believe I left my body at around 5:30 in the morning or so. And when they did come in and find me, my body did already appear dead to them. They had amplified stethoscopes and other ways of checking vital signs. And I did have a living will not to be resuscitated and to leave my my body alone for a while, and to really make sure I was dead before any ambulance or other people were called in, because I really did want to be dead. And I had a life, and this is like back in the 80s, and we're almost like living this all over again now. I was the product of believing that the world was in really bad shape. I believe humans were the worst thing that ever happened to the planet, mainly because looking at ecological stuff and listening to all the experts telling us what bad shape the world is and believing everything the media tells you, which is a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. And I was brainwashed into this. I think so many of us are brainwashed in every generation. There were also the end of the world crowd is always around, aren't they? They're always lurking just off or on stage to tell you, it's all over, and that you're gonna be punished for everything you've ever done. And although I wasn't religious, I did believe that human beings was the worst thing that could ever happen to the planet. And what was shown to me in my life review in my near death experience was the moment where I developed my cancer, and I saw this only after I was dead and in my life review, and that was you've heard the saying a straw that broke the camel's back. In my case, it was one photograph that broke me. And I'm sure it was well intended, but there was these ecology groups at the time putting out this series of photos that was a aerial picture of Los Angeles, but right next to a microscope picture of a cancer cell. And they're very similar.
Yeah.
They're very similar. And these pictures are still floating around. The minute I saw that photo, it stuck in my mind that nature had gone wrong and that humans were a cancer on the planet. And I believed that to the day I died, subconsciously. I believed that the world was actually going to end in my lifetime, not religiously, but just humans overgrazing, blowing up the planet, any number of ways humans could have destroyed the planet. And guess what? I thought humans were a cancer, and guess what I developed? Brain cancer.
Interesting. Interesting.
Isn't it interesting? And so it was in my life review as I went to the light, and there are more details on my site, and I will have a book out soon. But it was during my life review that I had the first time in my life to process the life that I had lived. And my life review began from the moment that I died and spun all the way back to even prenatal into my mother's belly. And there were things that I saw and experienced that I was not consciously aware of until that moment. Things that years later I told my mother about. She said, you couldn't possibly know that. How could you know that in this detail? And it was in that life review, which is the greatest processing you're ever going to go through. It's an amazing event for your life. It's an event in which you see everything from every angle, and you go through the most harsh judgment you can imagine, and that is self-judgment. Because once you get to the light, there is no judgment whatsoever. The judgment is all self-judgment, and it is that way in life.
In most cases,
right? We're harder on ourselves than anybody else is on us. But in my life review, I saw that how my mother and father's relationship when she was carrying me was terrible, and he beat her, and I was in her belly when he was beating her, and I felt this. I felt her emotions. I was threatened even before I was born. And then I saw that literally the way this affected me is that I was born angry, and I stayed angry to the day I died. I had a chip on my shoulder the day I died. And it was only in the processing of the life review that I actually made peace with my life. And what I have to tell people is don't wait till you die to do this. Do your processing in real time now on this side. Your transition to the other side and back again is something that can be a lot more holistic and pleasant than it can be. Don't wait to the grave to start processing. Process all your issues now in the real moment as best you can. And then the issues you can't process now, because sometimes it takes two to tango, it takes two to process the issues, and if the other person isn't ready to process with you, isn't hearing you, and doesn't believe you, process it in yourself anyway, and then do the greatest thing that can end karma that you can do, and that is forgive and forget. And do it in real time. Don't wait till you die.
So are you saying then that the cause of any illness or disease is a negative belief or emotion or experience?
No, not at all. It's a part of a whole plethora of things. There are toxic accidents. I learned on the other side that the universe is full of accidents, free radical events, which keeps the universe free. If there were no accidents, then this would be a closed-loop universe. So there are accidents. And what we have to watch, as I learned on the other side, is that our mind has great hindsight. It can make 20/20 sense of anything that's already happened. But does that mean you've connected the dots in the right way? In my book, there's a chapter called the Rorschach Universe. You know the Rorschach ink blots
mm-hmm.
that people look at in psychiatry?
Yes.
Everyone can look at the same ink blocks and get a completely different story. And that's a facility of the upper brain. And so I try not to make sense of everything anymore just from the upper brain point of view. I try to go deeper. And so so there are accidents, there are things that do happen, free radical events. And there is certainly, once you look back on things, you can connect the dots and say there is a cause and effect. But that is sort of a trick of the mind. What we're going to be developing from now on, and what people are struggling with, and this is why we're in Iraq, actually, is that we need to develop foresight. Foresight is true genius. Hindsight is an illusion. It really is. It can be comforting to some people to make sense of every little thing that's ever happened, and that's fine. But what we're developing now, and what we must develop to survive into the future, is foresight.
So what is your spiritual belief system now after this experience?
Well, you know, I'm not religious at all. In fact, I think forgive me for saying this, I think it's all the organized religions, the modern religions that have caused most of the wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the God lovers who go out and cause all the wars. It's at what's the bottom of all of this. I don't see atheists causing wars. I don't see, you know, Native Americans causing wars. I don't see, wars. It's very interesting if you track back who's causing all the trouble in the world right now. It's people that say that their God is the only God and that God is on their side and that God tells them it's okay to go kill innocent people. And who dies most of the time? Not the combatants. And, you know, I love every one of our people and all people that have died in wars, but it's mostly, in the history of war, it's mostly civilians, women and children that die in wars. War is not a holy thing. War is an abomination. And going to war is a failure of your leaders. And my quote for this month is that the only people that seem to be lost are our leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, when I was asking,
so I'm not religious at all. But
well, when I was asking about the spirituality, I wasn't even thinking religion and or
well, see,
religion.
And my what I have to say is I'm not religious at all, but I have a huge spiritual life now.
Okay,
like I never had before. I have a huge spiritual life.
So what do you like? What was your experience? Did you see God? Did you connect with God? Did you infinite spirit, whatever word you want to use? Like, did you find something there when you died?
Yes, in fact, the great surprise is when you do find your way to the light. I guess like any good atheist or non-believer, the first thing I said was, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Are you God?" And I had a very interesting experience with light. I was asking the light, you know, are you God? What is God? Tell me what God is. And the light said to me something very interesting, which as the light spoke to me, I understood what it was saying. And the light said to me, who and what is not God? And by that, I understood it to mean that If I had to explain who or what God is to you, I would have to name every single thing in the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's all God, and it always will be. And God is a simple word and a simple concept for a very young species of consciousness on this planet. God is much more dynamic, much more interesting than any of the religions make the Godhead out to be. And realizing, of course, that we are a direct part of the Godhead, so you are God. We've heard this before, but it's true. We are direct experience of the Godhead in the human form, and I feel so blessed now to be the human part of God that I can't even express how blessed it makes me feel.
Well, it's interesting. That's why I asked, because I can only imagine what having a true direct experience of that would be like, especially for someone without any kind of belief system going in. But can you walk us through, how did you know you were dead? Did you go down a tunnel? What happened?
For me, my first awareness was that I was suddenly outside of my body looking at my body. But it was like no dream I'd ever had. It was too real. And I was suddenly found myself looking at my body, and there was this light leaving my body. And it was so vivid and so real that I'd never had a dream like this. And I thought to myself, gosh, I'm either dying or dead. That was my thought, looking. And I panicked. And literally, in my mind or in spirit, ran down the hall to try to wake up my caretaker, and ran, you know, right through the door like a ghost, however you want to describe that. And I tried to wake her up. Of course, she was unaware of what I was doing. And in my panic, and I just went panicked. I found myself back in, back looking at my body again. And this time there was a darkness all around me. As I was watching this happen, and I was watching my body literally give up its life energy. And the light energy was moving in a certain direction to what looked like a pin spot of light way far away. But at that moment, my life review began. And believe me, because I was unprepared and certainly had not processed any of my issues in my whole life, my issues were the darkness around me, and my issues closed in on me, and it was not fun. I don't want to call it hellish, but it wasn't fun. All my issues, I couldn't get away from them. I was seeing them spinning around me and playing in every detail, emotions, sounds. I could see how many times people had tried to love me, but I was not receiving love. I could see so many things, so many times I could have helped someone, so many times people tried to help me. I could see why my father was the way he was with my mother and vice versa. I could see how my relationship with my brother had developed because of family dynamics. And it was all a non-intellectual process. And the darkness was just such an alone feeling. And you're on your own now. And I had no idea what was going to happen. And to make a long story short, I did find my way to the light with the help of what you might call a guardian angel. And I didn't believe in angels. I didn't believe in them at all. But my understanding is that the guardian angel that you have is your higher self. Your higher self is, and we use metaphors of guardian angels, guides, and all these sort of metaphors you can use for that direct connection that you have between you and the rest of the universe is what you might call your higher self. And it manifested for me in an angel because in my experience, what I've learned is that depending on your earliest memories and the earliest exposure that you're given, you will typically begin to have a death experience based on your cultural hypnosis. And mine was, you know, fairly Christian in the beginning. If you're Jewish, I believe you're going to have a Jewish experience. If you're Muslim, you're going to have a Muslim experience. And so it really shocked me. I said, you know, it was just amazing. And I talked to the angel, and the angel explained this to me. And I didn't realize it until I worked with P.M.H. Atwater, the great author who really kind of discovered me, and then with Dr. Ken Ring. And I didn't understand that, as far as they know, I'm the first near-deather to stop the experience. Because when I got to the light, I asked the experience to stop. And my exchange with the light was one of which I began to understand that this is an interactive experience. It's really, you are the center of the universe at that point. And when I realized it was an interactive experience, that's when I began my exchange with the light as a student, so to say. And there was no rush. There was no. I was not on a roller coaster ride anymore. I was in perfect space and in perfect love. And this light was nurturing like I don't feel I'd ever been nurtured this way before. And I began to have this great, what seemed like a conversation that lasted forever. And as I look back on it, it seems like it all happened in 1 second now.
Hmm. And so you were still, you're saying that by stopping it, you wanted to come back where most people want to stay.
No, not at all. I had no thought of coming back. I got the realization that death is just as interactive as life is. It's just, I swear to you, it's just as interactive as your life is right now. So I encourage people that have near-death experiences or die and go to the light. It's an interactive experience. It's not a ride you get on that's got a predetermined beginning and a predetermined ending. It's not that way at all. It can be exclusively unique to you.
So you got in the driver's seat.
Well, so to speak, but it was with trainer wheels.
So yeah. What happened at that point?
Well, at that point, I asked every question that I could possibly think of in my life, and every question I asked was answered to my understanding and satisfaction. One of the first questions that I asked after I got the knowledge of who and what is not God, that really opened me up. I mean, I really got that. And probably my next question was, well, then why is humanity so dark and doomed? Why are we evil? and it still gets me. The light then turned into a mandala of human souls, and took me into it, took me into this matrix, and it seemed like I could look into every human soul, and I could not see any evil. I could not see any darkness in any human soul ever. And it was in that moment that I fell in love with humanity, and I got the sacredness of humanity and how young it was, and how this has all just begun. Creation itself, in fact, has just begun.
Mm, wow. So what is this illusion of evilness or shadow, or what is that about? Did you ask it that?
Well, you know, that's a conversation that we could do a whole show on, and to kind of put it in a nutshell, it's perception and it's lack of insight and love. The truth is that your soul can never be tainted. You can, and no one can ever have control of your soul, even if you believe it. Your soul is sacred and can never, there's nothing you can ever do to taint your soul. And that's what you're put back in touch with when you go to the light. There is nothing in this life that you can do or ever will do that will taint that part of you. You can become an intellectual cripple. You can become what people may consider an evil person. But if you look into that person's soul, you will understand why they're deficient. And it's and most of it, almost all of it that I could see, it comes from our evolution out of the animal world. We are still living in a very animalistic, survival-oriented society, and it compromises us. It makes us do things, especially when your survival is threatened. And I saw that the same issue that makes one man a billionaire and makes another man a bum in a gutter not even trying to survive is the exact same issue. And I also saw that one of the greatest things humanity's ever going to do is coming up very soon. Very, very soon. And that is, we are about to transcend survival en masse. And it's an amazing event in human history. We're technically there already. We are technically at the point right now where we can feed and comfort every human and more on this planet.
Wow. So this whole sort of shift that people talk about in different terms, like 2012 and consciousness raising, and in your terms, that was seen as transcending the survival layer of existence?
Absolutely. It's one of the most important things a species on any planet can do in its evolution. It marks the fundamental change. We literally cannot be free. We literally cannot ascend until we become free of survival. And forgive me for saying this, but true integrity right now is so expensive, few of us can afford it. You may think you can afford it, but let's be honest. For most everybody, you can't you can't tell your boss the truth. Many people can't tell their husbands or wives the truth they feel because of the repercussions. You may lose your job. You may lose your family. Speaking the truth up till now has been a very risky thing to do, in fact. And so we're all compromised. I don't even think George Bush can tell the truth. He's so compromised by the same issue. And so,
show too.
I know, this is I was also shown, because I asked about religions and I asked about, you know, all this sort of thing, because it seems to be a big thing on our planet, and I was shown that humanity actually peaked spiritually around 2,500 years ago. We peaked. We've already peaked spiritually. And this is an amazing thing, that we attained access to universal intelligence consciously around 2,500 years ago. There's been nothing better ever since, and there won't be, because once you acquire universal intelligence and knowledge, it's timeless and it's eternal. And I'll give you an example. of all the modern religions, can anyone beat the simple phrase of do unto others as you would have them do unto you?
Mm-hmm.
You can't beat that with anything. What's happened since then is we have left the pure state of soul religion, the religion of your soul, into organized religion, which is a religion of the mind. These religions need books, and they fight over books, and they kill each other with their books. That's a religion of the mind, and the mind is highly organizing. And so what has happened to religion and spirituality on the planet for the masses, it's become highly organized. And in fact, most of the religions, you can't even question it. You can't question Islam at this point and be safe. You can't question Catholicism. And we weren't allowed to question anything. So what happened is, and I'm not against all this, it is an overview that religions have become organized, which is natural in many ways because that's what the mind does. Religion has become organized and the soul has been left behind. You've been disconnected from the soul. They created heaven. You know, heaven and hell is a very new advent in consciousness. It's not even in the Old Testament. I don't know why people think this heaven and hell has been around forever. It was created by the modern church. And I'm not against any of this, actually. It's just that you can see through it, and you have been dominated by this, and your life has been threatened by all of these things to this day. It's funny, isn't it?
Well, it begs the question that if we peaked spiritually, and that it seems like we kind of went the wrong direction after that, then.
No. Probably one of the greatest things I learned on the other side is that it's not all about spirituality. If you think it's all about spirituality, you're losing 95% of the picture. Reality and consciousness is like a rainbow. And if you're stuck on the violet ray, and it's just stuck in spirituality, you're not seeing the rest of it. And then on the other hand, if you're stuck down in the root chakra, red vibration, you're not seeing the rest of it. So we're evolving. And the greatest thing, one of the greatest things I learned on the other side was this concept called Gaia, G-A-I-A.
Mm-hmm.
The Gaia concept, have you heard of it?
Yes, absolutely.
And the Gaia concept is a holistic concept that shows that not only is the entire planet this incredible life form, almost beyond our imagination, still at this point, but so is the universe, is a living, conscious life form. And humans on the planet at this time in history have a very narrow concept of what life is and what intelligence is. In fact, if you look at the studies, every time you turn around now, they're redefining what intelligence is. It turns out that everything in the universe is super intelligent, including you. And what I learned about that was, and this goes back to the question of peaking spiritually, once you attain universal consciousness, it's eternal, it's universal, it doesn't age, it's not time-centered. So it's marvelous that on this particular planet that we do have our spirituality. That was a very important thing to get. But then that suppressed the advent of science and all the other rays of the rainbow that we need to have to be a holistic, transcendent being. And so because it's very blessed that we got to our spirituality fairly early in our evolution. It seems to be almost natural, by the way. Then, from then on, it was about, it was really about what do we do with this. It's not that you got there. It's not that, you can imagine these things or experience them. It's like you've got to live this now. And so the next 2,000 years or so to bring us to where we are is about living this and about realizing that we're part of a fantastic life form that is still evolving and at best is only at a midpoint. We're only at a midpoint of our creation and from where we've come from and to where we're going. And this may shock some people, but there's some things we haven't accomplished yet on this planet, and it's not political, and it's not spiritual. I saw that we do need a larger population on the planet. It is one of the keys to transcending, is to have a larger population on the planet. And believe me, there's going to be plenty of room, plenty of water, plenty of food for everybody. There's certain critical mass in the Gaia that needs to be achieved before we can actually go to the next level. And it's not about if you're an Einstein, it's not about if you're rich, it's not about if you're poor, it's not about if you're a doctor or an engineer. It has to do with having more eyes, more ears, and more hearts on this planet, because every single one of us are the same being. And so to let any human suffer is to like let yourself suffer. And what has happened in the industrial society is that we've lost the concept that you being here is a miracle. You just being here is an immense blessing to the rest of us. It's not how much money you make. It's not what kind of job you have. And so what I saw was something that's going to be happening very soon, and it's dependent on the population increase, which will bring on the pressure to make these changes happen, is that you've heard of a thing called the Magna Carta in history?
The Magna Carta? No.
Well, the Magna Carta happened hundreds of years ago. The Magna Carta was when the common people rose up, and the Magna Carta said, kings are not divine. Kings do not have the right of life and death over us. And it was the rise of the common man. Check it out in history, the Magna Carta. Like the Bill of Rights that came later.
Mm-hmm.
The Bill of Rights is your human rights. We're going to have another Magna Carta here on the planet that really is going to, and it's time to reestimate the value of humanity and the value of the individual in the whole. There's plenty of resources, there's plenty of food, there's plenty of consciousness. But at this particular time, certain people are suffering and looked down upon, not because of who they are and that they have a soul and that they are a part of you. They're looked down upon because, oh, they may not have money, they may be black, they may be yellow, they may be white, they may be red. It's very childish at this time. But very soon, one of the things I was shown on the other side about the future is that there will never again in history be as many jobs as there was once before. That time is over. So what value are you to the system if you don't have a job? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The complete value needs to be reestimated. And there, like I said, there's plenty of resources on the planet. There's plenty of grace on the planet. There really is. But what happens next? If you're going to get free of survival, one of the things you have to begin to think about is self-realization and self-initiation. And what's happening right now has happened before, actually. Self-realization comes in a couple of ways, but one of the most interesting ways is when you stop believing in everything. This is what's changed societies around the planet, is when people just stop believing in the gurus, they stop believing in the churches, they stop believing in the kings, and they then make the adjustment themselves. Hopefully in a very positive and creative way. This is self-realization, self-initiation.
So that's starting already.
Pardon me?
So that's starting already. We're already starting.
It's well underway. It really is. It's about to hit critical mass.
So when you say more people, how many more? Like, do you know when this is going to be finished?
Well, in the mass potential, you cannot ever really predict a date. That's why most psychics and prophets have most always been wrong. If they get one thing right, you know, it's like a whole career. But in the mass potential, there are these patterns, and the whole universe is pattern oriented. So the pattern, if you look back from the Gaia perspective, as I saw on the other side, is that humanity and the Earth itself has been through some of the most wildest things you can even imagine before we were even here and have survived it. The pattern is not the end of the world. The pattern is survival and upgrade and evolution. That's our real pattern, because probably the worst things that can happen have already happened. I want people to start understanding that. The biggest extinctions, the biggest parts of pollution, in fact, have already happened. The worst of it is behind us. Don't believe the media. Start going to your soul and looking at what's really going on this planet. The rise of love. I can't believe people just get all their information just from a little half-hour news show. There are more good people on the planet than there ever were bad people. There's more grace on the planet than there was anything else. And the average human being, if not stressed out by survival and not tortured or abused, the average human being would not hurt anybody. They would never hurt you. Even if it was legal, even if there was no law about it. This is the true nature of humanity, which we must go back to. And before we end tonight, I'd like to read a short little poem about that when we have a chance.
Oh, absolutely.
A little poem of inspiration.
Absolutely. So that's kind of what, so what you were talking about before, your true value, going back to your true purpose, your true nature,
mm-hmm.
who and what you are.
Exactly. I got to see the Mass Potential Into the Future for some ways, and I was astounded to see that the people of the future, what we call the future, look back on us now as the giants of history. Can you imagine that?
Hmm.
They look back on us with awe and look at us as the giants of history, because in our times that we are living now, we solve the problems that free humanity for its manifest destiny. And our manifest destiny is not to be industrial animals. Most of our past has been non-industrial. I can tell you all of our future is non-industrial. It's not about jobs. And society is going to reorient around this because of the advent of artificial intelligence, robotics, and all of these systems that are really coming in not to threaten us, but to free us. I'll give you a quick example that's kind of fun. When I was on the other side, and I was shown that I was shown something very interesting. I was shown what I call the Jules Verne effect. Remember Jules Verne?
Absolutely.
He invented science fiction, basically. Everything that Jules Verne wrote about really didn't exist in any way like he was writing about rockets to the moon, submarine, all that stuff. But the interesting thing I was shown from the Gaia perspective is that although that was pure fantasy, all the children that read those books went out and invented everything in those books and more and brought them into realization, manifested them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was shown that Star Trek is the Jules Verne's effect for the entire planet. Now, I wasn't a Trekkie fan before I died, but I certainly became one afterwards. And I'm really a next generation Jean-Luc Picard on. I'm not really Shatner early Star Trek, because that was more like a Monty Python. But I was shown that everything you see on Star Trek, our children are inventing now and will bring into this world, including food replication, free energy, and if you look at the satellite systems around the planet, Star Trek is playing 24 hours a day, every day of the week around the planet.
Hmm. So this is
having a tremendous influence on our children in a very positive way.
So you're saying that's a picture of the future, of the direction of humanity?
Yes. There's not going to be any problem about food, water. There's a time coming when money doesn't matter anymore. It just doesn't matter. Gold and diamonds go back to, because you can have, you can replicate any of those things in the near future, actually, not the far future. So gold and diamonds and all that go back to what they were originally, ornamental, ceremonial items. It doesn't matter how many diamonds you have. It doesn't matter how much money you have, because you can't spend your money in the future.
Now, did they show you what it looked like between where we are now and when we get to that stage?
What do you mean?
Well, the transition, the change. I mean, people are resistant to change.
Well, and that's a very good thing. I was shown that that's called the resistance factor. And there is resistance in the universe. There's gravity. There's atomic forces. There's mental forces. If there wasn't any resistance, things would just fly off the handle all the time, and we'd be in such a chaotic universe, you couldn't make any sense of it at all. So although fundamentalists don't like me, I appreciate them for representing the resistance factor. The universe is set up in a very interesting way. Once a pattern is created, it takes a lot to decreate that pattern, and that's what makes the universe stable. You know, once you've developed a habit, it's hard to change that habit unless you put a little more effort into it than the old habit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is in physics, and that's the way it is in nuclear structures, that's the way it is with karma. It's all works the same. And so, yes, if you think things are hard now, go back 100 years and take a look at what things were like. Go back 1,000 years and look at what things were like. If you think things are hard now, come on. Things are so much better now for the general masses than you can imagine on the planet. It's just that we don't see it because we're so spoiled. We're born into a world of superabundance now. One of the things I was shown on the other side is the simple phrase, what do you want to be when you grow up, is so new to our consciousness. Until very recently, you were never asked that question because your future was determined by your father and your family, and if you were a woman, you had no even less choice than that.
Mm-hmm.
So no wonder we're confused. We're suddenly being given the eye-opening consciousness that we really do create our own realities, that you can be what you want to be when you grow up. So it is confusing, and the superabundance is totally confusing. I mean, I still get spaced out going to the supermarket. And I tell you, I don't know how many other people have had this experience, but when I go into a video store to rent a video, I go in knowing what I want, and I get so confused by all the choices, I end up spending 45 minutes and then can't decide what I want.
Absolutely.
This is better than it was 1,000 years ago. You know, 1,000 years ago, going out to dinner was a very different process than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, the times are better now for the poor on the planet than ever before in the history from the Gaia perspective. What's interesting is, this is amazing. If there's somebody starving in Africa, we know about it. Whether we do something about it or not right now is still what we're growing into. An example is those miners that are trapped in the mines now that's on the news so much.
Yes.
Our consciousness, and you have to think of yourself as a global our consciousness is right on the spot, and we're talking about six men, and the whole world is looking, and the whole world is hoping, and all these resources are being put into saving these men. That would not have even happened 100 years ago, 200 years ago, certainly not 1,000 years ago. You wouldn't even have been conscious of this happening. 1,000 years ago, you wouldn't know if someone on the other side of the planet was starving. Do you see how incredible this is?
It is. It's amazing.
It's good. It's not bad. It's at the beginning, though. The advent of charity is something new on this planet, and humans invented it. The idea of retirement is an incredibly graceful concept, and only humans have that concept. You know, in the bacterial, insect, and animal world, there is no retirement, is there? How graceful humans are.
Well, we're coming to the top of the hour, and I want to make sure we have time to read your poem to take us out with that. But one final question before we do. You mentioned that the whole order of the universe. What is the main point of, like, why did we have to go through that and come through this and go, where are we, you know? What is the point of all of this?
You know, that's one of the more interesting things, because I asked that on the other side. So what's the plan, okay? Because I want to get with the plan, and I tell you, the light lovingly told me, there is no plan, there never was a plan, wake up. This is the greatest gift you as a conscious being will ever be given. There is no plan, you are the plan in the superabundant universe. You give meaning to the universe. It's not that God gives meaning to anything. God is meaningless unless you add that part of it to the universe. What matters to you matters to the universe. You are the center of the universe. You are the plan. And it's the greatest gift you'll ever experience.
Well, on that note, how about your poem?
Okay. And this is kind of remind people of how graceful this whole system really is. And it's called Invocation of Ecstasy. And it starts out, we who are here now are the creations of the first word. We who are here now are the rays of the first light. We who are here now are the star seed from the first garden. Let us open our hearts and look again. Let us open our hearts and let love rise more than we ever have before, maybe even more than we ever thought possible. look again, for deep in every human soul there is a knowing that all life is a gift beyond measure, and that love, yes, love, is the heart, the breath, and the meaning of life. May there always be more love. May there always be more life. And may we all thrive and live forever, again and again and again. Oh, dear universe, I love my life. There you are.
Well, well, it's been a pleasure. I've loved having you on the show. Mellon Thomas Benedict, you can find him online at Mellon, M-E-L-L-E-N, -Thomas.com. And rather than typing it out, just go off the newsforthesoul.com website. If you missed any of this show or any of our shows ever, they're all free all the time, newsforthesoul.com. And thanks for tuning in, everybody, and thank you so much for being on the show, Mellon.
Thank you, and blessings to everybody.
All right, thanks for tuning in. See you next week.